Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to Film Fellows.
Hey, welcome to Film Fellows. If you don't know, about 2 years ago, we did a crossover with Two Chicks Talking Flicks, and we did Psycho. And after that, I thought, you know, we could do a few more movies. So 2 or 3 times a year, as a little bonus treat, over on patreon.com/booksboys, we do a movie review. And now, as promised, 2 years later, we're back with American Psycho. You can check out the Two Chicks Talking Flicks podcast, but I said I would share it on our feed for free as well. But if you want a couple more reviews from us, as well as, of course, all of our Playboys, Dark Place, Dreamers, Poetry Pals, Rockstar Interviews, everything, go to patreon.com/booksboys. But for right now, enjoy Two Chicks Talking Flicks and our free review of American Psycho.
This is Two Chicks Talking Flicks, where we review movies. Love them or hate them, someone's got to do it. So enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Sarah, and this is Two Chicks Talking Flicks, anything else that gets in the mix, and I'm here today with our friends over at Books Boys Podcast. Hello, how are you doing?
Hello, Sarah, it's nice to speak to you again.
Yes, it's good to talk to you too.
I'm Dean from Books Boys. Hello.
Hi. For anybody who didn't listen to our last episode, which we covered Psycho, I don't know why I said Psych, it's a TV show, Psycho, what is your podcast about?
So we do Books Boys, the monthly book review podcast, and just myself and one of my co-hosts will sit down and we'll chat about all the books that we've read that month, and then sometimes authors will call in and chat about some books that they're just releasing or just about to release. So it's mostly books.
Yeah. That's awesome. And what good books have you read lately?
I'm always hitting up the classics. At the minute, I'm just doing some Chekhov plays for our Patreon. But for our main show, I'm doing some Spanish books as well. We read a Spanish book set during World War II and the Spanish Civil War that I just recorded on our last episode. I read a book recently by an author about investigating the death of Dickens. Dickens Ooh. Is my favorite author, so that was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's cool.
But I take anything I can find. I tend to go towards classics, but I'm also trying to branch out a little bit more.
Yeah, I haven't read a book in a while. It's been quite a bit.
Oh, nutty.
I know. Like, it's weird. If I start reading, like, then I get addicted to reading, and then that's all I want to do, and that's not good for doing other stuff.
You have read a book since we covered Psycho, right?
Yeah, I've read a book since then. actually, I read a book for another podcast that is also a book review, and we had a lot of fun. And I ended up having to actually listen to the book because it was a lot longer than I thought it was. And so then I just listened to it. And so I listened to a lot of books more recently, but I didn't read them. I feel like that's cheating.
Yeah, a lot of people have recommended, you know, audiobooks to me. I've literally never tried an audiobook. I listen to a lot of podcasts and a lot of music, and I don't know if I would have time to listen to audiobooks, but I always seem to have time to read books, so I read about 5-6 books a month usually, and then maybe a play or two as well. So I get it fitted in somehow.
Yeah, I would like to listen to more books, but it really just depends on who is reading it, because sometimes the same person is doing both gender voices, and it's really weird. And other times it's really good. And so I'm just like, sometimes I just don't have the capacity to listen to it.
Do they ever do any that have more than one voice actor? Like the different characters?
Yeah, I listened to one that did, it was like a 4-character book, and each character, whenever they would talk, it was a different person doing their voice. But most of them are, it's the same person.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. But still, it's cool that they can do it with more, because then it's more of a dramatic reading, kind of like a, I don't know, it's like a table read almost.
Yeah. I liked it better that way. And
oh, yeah, for sure.
It was actually
What's the last book that you read then?
Oh, I don't know. It was probably something smutty. It was not historically accurate, I can tell you that. Or or classic. I'm sure it was something saucy. I honestly don't know.
That's always good. That's always good. I need to read more saucy literature. I never really allow myself to read any.
Well, the girl.
Sometimes it's difficult, though. Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the girl I recorded with, you should check out her podcast because she does a lot of more smuttier or, you know, more racy books.
I think I've maybe done the occasional one, but it's very, very rare. But it's so funny because I read so much. I read every single day, and yet you ask me, like, what's the last book you've read? And I'm like, oh, no, what have I read? Was it a Chekhov play, maybe? I can't remember.
Yeah, I want to say it was, spoiler alert, I believe that's like a romantic comedy. I think that's the last one I read, and I honestly don't think I finished it. It's supposed to be really good, and I got to, I don't know, about a third of the way. I was just like, no, can't do it. They got together, and I was like, okay, I'm done. Because I knew what was going to come, and I just didn't want to continue.
You didn't want it, yeah. Even I have occasionally, it's rare, but occasionally I'll read a book, and I'm just like, you know, I don't think I can finish this, you know.
Yeah.
The last time it happened was a Mario Vargas Llosa book. I was reading it in Spanish.
Ooh.
And it's called The War at the End of the World. I don't really like war stuff anyway, but I just tried it. Latin American books don't have that much dialogue, so it's just kind of endless narrative about war. And I got a third of the way through, and I just thought, I can't. Like, I just can't read another 400 pages of this, you know?
I feel you. I hate that.
So we're doing American Psycho though, yes. But the thing is we haven't read it. We should stress when we did Psycho we read it, but I couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, no, me either. I guess I could have listened to it, but if the book is anything like the movie, which according to my small investigating that I did, it is. It's like almost word for word. I don't know if I'd enjoy it. So
yeah, you know, this is one of the very, very few occasions when I will outright say the movie is better than the book. Categorically, no discussion.
Yeah.
Because it's just a lot of the stuff in the movie, it is the way that, you know, Christian Bale acts the scenes. You've got obviously the music that plays into certain things. Yeah. And he has this kind of fun. It's for, you know, it's not a scary movie, even though the content could be dark. It's kind of brightly lit and it's almost happy. And you don't get that in the book, you know.
Yeah.
So it doesn't bring the tone across as well. And I really think the book is kind of mediocre, whereas the movie just really plays on the best parts and makes it something special for me.
Well, in like the book, it's really dark. Like they had to cut out a lot in order for this movie just to be rated R. So
yeah,
and like he's an asshole and like a chauvinist and all this stuff, and everything you don't like about him in this movie, you would hate him in a book.
I think so. Yeah.
So that was really interesting. That's the only thing that makes me kind of want to read it. Like sometimes you have a bad character, a villain, and you almost like them, and you're like, I see redeeming stuff in them, and you're like, maybe if just this one thing happens, maybe they might be good.
But if only he didn't murder and eat women, he would be fantastic. Yeah.
And did he murder anybody? I don't know.
Well, that's the other thing. I'll be honest, the first time I saw this, I was a lot younger, you know. Mm-hmm. I must have been about 20. And someone recommended it to me, and I watched it, and I thought, this is fantastic, he's great. He's got his music stuff, he's all fancy, he's going around in his limos, his nice clothes, he loves his, you know, daily moisturizers. He's a great guy. And he said, you did pick up that he was also like a murderer and things. And I was like, oh, damn, yeah, I guess you're right. I guess he's not a great guy. It kind of slipped my mind, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But when I watched it this time, I was like, oh, yeah, he's not a good guy.
No, not at all. So for anybody who hasn't watched American Psycho, basically we have Patrick Bates. He is very wealthy, though he does no work. It's set in the 80s, so they're during like the yuppie workaholic Wall Street guys. And he just like has to kill people. I don't know if it's like people that has wronged him or people that just happen to cross his path, but he seeks out people and kills them.
I don't know if you noticed, but Patrick Bateman is a nod to the character Norman Bates in Psycho. That's cool.
I also noticed that if you remove the E, he's Patrick Batman. And he plays Batman.
Oh my God, I didn't even realize that.
I noticed that. And I was like, oh, look, how fortuitous.
Fantastic.
He plays a rich guy who hurts people. Job, so all I could think was, how would have Leonardo DiCaprio done this role? And would I have enjoyed it more with him as the lead actor? And I kind of think I would have.
Really?
I think so. Because, like, okay, so The Wolf of Wall Street, he's an asshole in that movie, but you kind of like him. And I feel like,
yeah, I suppose,
in this movie, if he was playing this character, he would have done it in a different way. And he's just so charming and likable. I think it would have come off as charming and likable. And I not as psychotic and asshole as he is, as Christian or Christian Bale is.
Okay, that's interesting, because I think that Bale does bring a certain charm to it. You know, that scene where he goes into great detail describing his morning routine. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. Can I please purchase all of these various soaps and moisturizers? You know.
Speaking of that, my sister and I, when we were watching it, she was like, I wonder how many takes it took for him to do that, to peel off that face mask.
To name it all in order, yeah.
And I go, I bet you it took him one take to peel that that mask off. Because I go, it's Christian Bale. And I looked it up, or I was looking at stuff from the movie, and it said that in that scene, fortunately for him, it came off all in one take.
Wow.
I knew it. I just had that feeling. They said that he like walked around speaking in this American accent the whole entire time. And as soon as the movie wrapped, then he talked with his British accent and people were like, oh, he's British. They thought he was like getting ready for another role.
Oh, wow.
And that he wasn't actually British because he's a method actor.
Yeah, that's got to be the way to do it, right? You got to get yourself into the character and just go deep into it, you know. And that's a few you know, the best actors seem to do that. So I guess I can see why. Even though it seems weird, it's like, why would you put on an accent when you're not actually acting? But
well,
I guess it just makes it easier.
He had extensive dental work done for this part. And
really?
Yeah, and it said that they weren't sure if it was at his own direction or the studio.
Wow.
But I assume it's just for him. I have this feeling that it was just his idea that this guy would have perfect teeth.
He's got to look perfect. Because he does look perfect. Like, he's a very handsome guy. And, you know, he mentions, like, I'm doing my morning sit-ups or crunches. I can do 1,000 now. And I'm like, yep, with that body, you probably can.
Now, okay. So you've read the book. So maybe you can tell me this and tell anybody who's never read the book. Is he actually Patrick Bates, or is there some other person that's Patrick Bates? Because everybody keeps calling him somebody else, and he's like, they would say he's snivelly and he's a whiny and he's skinny and this nerd. And he's like, but I'm Patrick Bates. So is he?
Yeah,
Patrick Bates?
Yeah. So it's been a few years since I've read the book, but I'll tell you my understanding of it, and to be honest, there's still a little bit of debate on it. My understanding of it is that, yeah, he is, you know, he is who he says he is. He is Patrick Bateman. The thing is, I think that everyone is so wrapped up in themselves. You know, every single person we meet is a narcissist, essentially, you know? Yeah. So they're so wrapped up in themselves that they don't really care about anyone else. You know, even, slight spoiler, but even when he's confessing certain things later, no one really cares,
yeah.
You know? Everyone's just so wrapped up in themselves. Then you add to the fact that they kind of all look the same. You know, he even mentions at one point, this guy wears the same glasses as me and goes to the same barber, but I have a slightly better haircut.
Yeah.
But they all more or less look the same. They look like Wall Street guys with their suits and their braces and their glasses and their slick back hair. And they all talk about work and really nothing else.
Yeah.
I think that they just don't know who anyone is.
Maybe.
Because there's even parts where they're looking for the dead guy in London later. And someone's like, yeah, but he's not dead because I had dinner with him. It's like,
yeah.
No, you didn't. You just didn't know who you had dinner with because you're all the same.
Maybe. That makes sense, too. Another thing I was thinking is maybe he was this, like, little scrawny thing, and then he came back and he looked like all them. You know, like, maybe took some time off work and he got work done. And he started exercising and bulked up. And so then people don't see him as that guy.
So they don't know who. Yeah, that could also work. I never thought about that, actually. It's an interesting take.
You know, I don't know. It's just very strange. And I was like, who is this guy? I was like, is his alter ego Patrick Bateman? Or, like, what is happening? We didn't understand half the movie. We just sat there and we're like, what is going on?
I mean, I've seen it enough times that the scenes are all familiar to me. So I hope I understand it, but there's still bits that I'm not clear on, you know, why no one knows who he is. Yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah.
Some bits later on towards the end where it's kind of like, what's going on here? Not everything is completely clear, even after reading the book, and I must have watched the film about 20 times.
Yeah, and, like, do people hear him when he says, like, when he tells the girl, you're an ugly bitch and I want to play around in your blood? Like, did she actually hear him, or is that him talking to himself in the mirror?
Yeah, that's one of those things I don't know. I suppose when he says that in the bar, at first glance, you're like, maybe she just didn't hear him over the music in the bar, you know. But he does. She hears everything else he says. So I don't know.
Yeah, because he does that a lot, and people don't comment on the things that he says. And so
yeah, the time when they're flirting with the girls and they're pretending that their friend is Gorbachev, they also say he works in murders and executions.
Yes.
And she goes, oh yeah, everybody else I know who works in mergers and acquisitions hates it. And it's like, oh, either you're not listening to him, or he's not really saying what we think he's saying.
Yeah. Somewhat. And, you know, honestly, that's kind of a cool technique, but I feel like you got to let the audience know, you know, one way or the other.
Right.
So then you're just sitting there and you're like, I don't understand what just happened. Because sometimes he does some crazy stuff and they do hear him. Like when he's at the shop talking about his sheets, I feel like the little lady understood what he said.
Yeah, he screams that, you know, stupid bitchy, and then mentions the you'll kill her or something, and she has a visual reaction, like a kind of, like she kind of gasps. So, yeah, sometimes they do hear. That's a very funny scene, actually. He's just in the laundry with these sheets that are covered in blood.
Yeah.
He's like, get these stains out.
Which, honestly, that doesn't seem like him, because He's very tidy. He has an extremely white apartment. And he has these sheets. Like, that doesn't sound like him.
Yeah, everything about him, you're right, his apartment is pure white from one corner to the next. It's all very, it's got that kind of ultra chic, almost minimalist kind of, just everything is so clean and white looking, you know. There's not much personality in it, to be honest, but there's just a lot of this kind of modern, clean look to it.
Yeah, so it's really weird, and that doesn't seem like something, because he's very methodical, and I feel like he takes his time and really plans out how he's going to murder these people, and then to slip up and have these bloody sheets just seems out of character.
Yeah, I guess that never really struck me, but now that you mention it, it is a bit. Yeah, it kind of is.
Well, that's what I'm here for, you know? We stick to our lanes. You're the book guy. Oh, I'm the movie guy.
Let me ask you, because there's a lot of murders in this. Which is the one, and most people say the same thing here, which is the one that you kind of struck you the most and that made you dislike him the most?
The homeless guy.
Yeah, specifically his dog, right?
Yeah. I was looking down when that happened, so I didn't see the dog. I heard it.
Oh.
And I was like, what? Did I just hear a dog? But
it's,
I was
so
messing
funny
with my dogs at the time, so.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't see it.
I've watched this with so many people, and everyone's like, no, he kills the dog. And I'm like, yeah, he also killed the homeless guy and like 20 women, but you're fixating on the dog.
Yeah.
You know,
if I had seen it and didn't just hear it, I probably would have said that. Or when he tried to kill the cat.
Yeah, he picks up the cat and he thinks, so this is one of those things where he picks up the cat and he's going to shoot it into the ATM.
Yeah.
Because he thinks the ATM says, feed me a stray cat.
Yeah.
And that's one of those moments where it's like, obviously, it didn't say that.
No.
So he's just kind of crazy. But it is one of those times where we think, okay, so the reality we're seeing is maybe not completely true then. And it kind of opens the door to question some of the other things that we're seeing and hearing.
Yeah. And right before he does that with the cat, one of the security guards said, burning the midnight oil, Mr. Smith. And I was like, who the hell's Mr. Smith? And somebody else calls him Davis. I was just like, I am so confused.
Yeah, it's interesting because my theory falls apart a little bit here. My theory was that, you know, they're all the same and they don't care about anyone else. But the security guard wasn't part of that yucky crime, and he's still confused for someone else.
So it's really weird.
So that I don't know. But they often, at one point, so one of the guys he kills is Mark Allen, and he pretends for half the movie to be the guy he's killed.
Yeah.
But then they also think he's other people. They think he's Marcus Halberstram at one point, a couple times as well.
Because they look alike.
Yeah. But he has a slightly better haircut.
I love that they all have the same business card. And my sister was...
Yes, that's the iconic scene.
Yeah, my sister was like, they all look the same. I said, no. His is bolder. It's a little bit different font, and it's easier to see. I was like, and the color's just a little different. She was just like, shut up.
It's funny because they, for all intents and purposes, they're the same card. But yeah, there's slight little differences, as you say. And you know, they all go into detail about it. Like, oh, this one's pale nimbus, raised lettering and whatever. His is bone, of course.
Of course.
But it's just fantastic. I love his reactions in this scene when he looks at the card and he's like, I can't believe they prepared that card to mine. And he's sweating and he's like, he's going to have an anxiety attack or something at this idea that they could possibly prepare someone else's business card to his. And they put them down and they all look very similar.
Yeah. Because they're all boring.
It's fantastic.
Yuppies.
Yeah. The only one that's different is actually the slightly nerdy guy who later comes back with his card like a day or two later, and his has got like red text in it, and they're just like, oh, cool. Like, they don't care about him at all.
Yeah. And apparently he's in love with Patrick.
Yes. Another fantastic scene when he follows him into the bathroom to kill him over this business card business. puts on his strangling gloves, you know.
Yeah.
Puts them on his neck while he's, you know, I guess he's peeing or whatever, or washing his hands or whatever in the bathroom. And he just turns around and is like, oh, why now? I've wanted this for a long time. And Patrick freaks out so much, he goes and washes the gloves in the sink and then leaves.
It was so weird. I was like, you know, I almost would have been okay with that death. That at least made sense. But I was just like, what is happening?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that the one that would have made sense is the one that he doesn't actually go ahead with.
Yeah. I don't like how he talks to his assistant or receptionist.
Oh, of course. It's horrible. I mean, the first time we meet her, he basically says, you know, wear something else tomorrow. And she's like, oh, is this not okay? And he's like, you're better than that.
Yeah, he's like, oh, don't wear that outfit. You're prettier than that. Dress in a skirt and heels.
Yeah.
It's just like, what? Ew.
And it's actually kind of sad because she's crushing on him. And he's not being nice to her. And she's impressed. He's a fancy rich boss guy or whatever. So she's impressed with him anyway. And even eventually goes on a date with him, kind of. And it's kind of sad, actually.
Yeah, and so, you know, he's very misogynistic towards her. But you want to know something I found really interesting? When he, at the beginning of the movie, when he does his whole getting ready routine and he's taking a shower and we see his ass, apparently all the women that were on the set all came and gathered around to watch the scene where he was showering. And I told this to my sister.
Wow.
Yeah. I go, that would never, never happen with a woman. They would close the set.
No.
And she goes, no, they wouldn't. All the guys would be there. I said, no, they close the set when they do stuff like that. They would never have a whole gaggle of guys standing there gawking at this girl while she's showering. I go, especially nowadays.
Wow.
But even back then, I don't think they would have done it. I would think they would have had a closed set.
I don't think so.
Where they would only have the minimum amount of people that you need so this person would feel comfortable.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that. I don't love it. It is a bit, you know, it's like, okay, cool. They want to see the hot guy's ass. But then, yeah, as you say, like, that wouldn't fly the other way around, you know? So I don't love that, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's super interesting because that would not fly if it was a female, especially today. Especially if they didn't know that, you know, it's one thing if he knows and he's like, heh, 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 like, check out all the ladies checking me out.
Selling tickets for it.
Yeah. Drinking their Diet Cokes, you know. But I was like, wow, that's super interesting.
That is interesting. I didn't know that. It's kind of, yeah, it's interesting because he has that scene in the shower where he is naked, but then we see him later. I guess we only see him naked twice, and the second time is when he's running through the hallways with a chainsaw covered in blood, which is fantastic.
Which apparently he hung out in that outfit or non-outfit for many hours. In between.
Oh, wow. Right.
Like when they were doing stuff and he was just walking around with just his like socks and a cock sock on.
That's ridiculous.
Hanging out. Literally hanging out with swing out, I guess.
Quite literally. Yeah. Wow. Okay. There was no need for that.
And it said that Ewan McGregor was subsequently offered the role of Patrick Bateman, but declined after Christian Bale personally urged him to do so. Like, how Patrick Bateman of that is that? Like, hey, don't take this role. I want it.
So he really wanted the role.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he does a fantastic job at it, so I'm glad he had it. I can't really imagine anyone else doing it, but... Although you mentioned DiCaprio, I guess he could have done a good job at it. But for me, this is an iconic role.
I think Ewan McGregor could have done it too. I could see that. He has that kind of yuppie look about him.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, other people maybe could have. I just can't. I don't know. I don't want it changed.
Because I feel like Ewan McGregor, and I know DiCaprio, along with Christian Bale, are all... well, okay, I don't know if Ewan McGregor is, but I know DiCaprio is a method actor as well. But I would bet that Ewan McGregor probably is. And so I feel like they would dedicate themselves to the part just the same.
Yeah, maybe I'm like overselling him. Maybe others, you know, could have other method actors could have done it. But it's in my top three all-time, you know, favorite movies. So I I think this is perfection. You know,
have you?
Let me ask you about the music scenes, though. What do you think? Because for me, those are something that really make the movie.
So it's so extreme to see this guy be the way he is, and then he is listening to "Walking on Sunshine." or Simply Irresistible. Like, it's just very weird. I think at one point he was talking about classical music. That sounds more like him. So Walking on Sunshine.
Yeah.
Seems very strange.
It's a weird, you know, at one point he's in the back of the limo with his fiance with a headset on, and he's like, oh, I'm trying to listen to the new Robert Palmer album, but my supposed fiance keeps interrupting me.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't really care about her at all.
No.
He cares about the music. Then we see him talk about the Phil Collins. We see him talk about the Huey Lewis and the news.
Yes.
It's fantastic, though. Like, I love it because he's there. He's about to kill people. And he's just like, you know, Huey Lewis and the News really came into their own with their fourth album, Sports, and just starts listing, like, details about all the tracks and the sound. You know, Phil Collins, when he was in his solo career, was more satisfying in a narrower sense. And I just love how it doesn't, the juxtaposition of the fact that he's about to smash a guy up with an axe whilst he's just, like, casually going through the liner notes of some CD he's bought. You know, it's fantastic.
So, I loved all the music. This hasn't come up in a really long time, so I might as well talk about it now. I have a personal vendetta, or maybe he's a vendetta of my, I don't know. Me and Phil Collins. So many moons ago, I saw his, songs on iTunes for like 69 cents. And I was going through and I already had a couple and I was like, no, I'm not going to buy this CD right now. And I just, it was like the best of, and I was like, nah, I don't need it right now. Since that day, I have been hounded by Phil Collins, if not daily, at least weekly. So while I was watching this movie and all of a sudden Phil Collins comes on, I was like, no, no. Not again.
I have heard you mention this before a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And then not only one song, but two songs. And then he talked about it. And I was like, God damn it, Phil Collins. Just.
Yep. So, but it's great away. Detail.
Yeah. I just can't get away from it, no matter what I do.
The funniest one is when it's the one time in the whole movie when someone points out that he's kind of. Like, yeah, they mention a few times that he's, you know, a bit, and he's a bit of a dork or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the one time when someone laughs at him, which is when he's got the two girls around and he's playing the Whitney Houston album.
Yeah.
And the one girl just laughs. Just, you actually own a Whitney Houston, more than one? Like, and he just continues describing it. But this is the reason the movie is better than the book. Because these scenes where he discusses the music, and they go on for several minutes.
Yeah.
In the book, it just feels like you're reading a Wikipedia.
Oh, that sucks.
Because, you know, we're looking at him, we're hearing the music, he's discussing it, he's putting on his raincoat and getting his axe out. It's the juxtaposition of the violence with the music and the kind of 80s campness to it is fantastic in film. Whereas when you read it, you're just like, here's an entire page just listing Phil Collins' tracks. And it's like, oh, this is boring, you know. It doesn't have the same fun vibe. It is you're just reading an article about Robert Palmer or whatever.
Yeah. I mean.
So that's my reason.
Like, that is a really cool. And I do like when things are like that. But I just don't know if it was done well enough. Or pushed far enough, I guess. I don't know. Like, maybe it just, we were so confused by this movie. I was so befuddled. But like, that is a really cool thing to have. And I like when you're talking about it, it makes me want to watch it. But like, watching it made me not want to watch it.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I did not enjoy this movie at all. And I normally like a lot of movies, and it seems like something I would like. I like a lot of Christian Bale movies, but for whatever reason.
Wow, I'm perplexed. Yeah. You're not the first person. I've watched it with a few people who haven't liked it. But they, I don't know, that most people I've shown it to have really, really loved it. One or two haven't, but it tends to be because they came from maybe, you know, other cultural backgrounds where they didn't really understand the kind of the background of the New York and the yuppie type thing. So a lot of it was lost on them. Anyone I know that's kind of from like a kind of Western background loved the movie. So it's interesting that you didn't.
Yeah, like that's why, to me, I think he played him too hard. So he wasn't like Dexter enough. I've never really watched Dexter, but I feel like when he is around other people, like, he's jovial, he's nice, he's, you know, whatever. And then when he's by himself, he's a murderer of murderers and, you know, calculated and all of that. And I feel like he's a dick in both worlds. And so that guy isn't the one that I would think that would listen to Walking on Sunshine, unless he does have some personalities. And it's his Patrick Bateman is the asshole who kills people, but his Mr. Smith or Davis or whatever his other person is named is the one that loves that music. But because Mr. Bateman shares a brain with that other person, he knows all these facts, and it's just irritating him because he has to listen to this stuff. Like, if it was like that and we knew that going in, I feel like I would really, really enjoy it. That's why I feel like Leo would have done a better job, because he has that boyish, fun look about him, and then he can also be an asshole.
So. Yeah, that's fair. I suppose I can see, you know, what you're saying makes sense. Yeah.
I don't want to ruin.
I like how it's done, but I take your point.
Yeah. One thing that also bothered me was when the hooker, Christy, when she is in the bathtub and he's like, wash your vagina. Okay, that's fair. You tell her to do that. That's perfectly fine. But she grabs a loofah in a strange bathroom. You don't know where that loofah's been. It's just sitting in a bowl. And you just grab it and you put it in your most delicate of places. Christy, don't just stick a loofah in there.
Yeah.
Like,
it's interesting that that's the bit you remember from that scene. The bit I remember is immediately after that when he says, choose any robe, not the Bijan.
Oh. I didn't understand.
And I love that, because he's like, there you go, there's a lot of bathrobes, put any on. Not the good one, obviously.
Obviously, because, you know, wouldn't want the girl, the whore, to have something nice.
Yeah. What do you think about his obsession with fitting in, though? Because this comes up a couple times. And it comes up in this scene, but it comes up another time. You know, he mentions what his fiance asked him why he even works at Pierce and Pierce and why he's, you know, whatever. Because, as you mentioned earlier, he doesn't work. He just goes in and sits at a desk and reads porn magazines and listens to music.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I have to work there because I want to fit in. And we see again in this scene, he actually tries to impress the two girls, the two prostitutes. And they don't care.
Yeah.
And he's like, do you not want to know what I do? And they're like, not really. He's like, well, I'm going to tell you anyway. I work for Pierce and Pierce. Do you know it? And they're like, nope. And he's like, well, it's pretty important.
Yeah. Like, I don't get a dog, you know? If you want something to be enamored by you. Like, you know, maybe don't kill everybody, because clearly you're not good with people. And the one person he should love is his fiance, and that's the one person he probably detests more than anybody.
Except I mean, when he breaks up with her eventually, he literally says, "You're not terribly important to me."
Yeah, which is so awful to say to somebody.
But then it was a mess anyway. Like, they were both having an affair.
True, true. I mean, she's no saint, but, like, you should at least, you know, have some kind of feeling about them.
What's interesting is he doesn't seem to care much about the girl he's having the affair with either. In fact, he doesn't really care about anyone. And although he has a lot of sex in the movie, he never once gives me the idea that he really enjoys it.
You know who I think he loves the most besides himself? Paul Allen. Like, I think he's just in love with him.
Yeah, I think he's jealous of Paul Allen. First of all, Allen's got the Fisher account, which is some important account at work they all care about. And then there's a fantastic moment where he says, you know, I went into Paul Allen's apartment and he feels anxiety when he realizes his apartment overlooks the river and is obviously more expensive than mine.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has to go cool off when he realizes that for a moment, you know. So Paul Allen's the only person, I guess, he has any respect for. But it's funny because he, you know, he even mentions to his girlfriend, like, you know, we never even shared a past. And yeah, we've got friends coming. You can keep them. I don't care, you know.
Yeah.
And as I said, like, he has sex with a lot of prostitutes. His girlfriend is his affair, whatever. I don't think he really cares. Because even when he's having the threesome, he's looking at himself in the mirror the whole time and doing, like, muscle poses and running his fingers through his hair. It's almost like, well, cool guys have a lot of sex, so I better have a lot of sex. You know, I don't think he enjoys it even.
No. That's why I think, like, he's a narcissist, obviously. And that's why I think maybe he, you know, transformed himself into this character that he thought everybody would appreciate. And I think he finds out that no one does, because he's surrounding himself with people who are just the same as him. Even Josh Lucas.
Yeah, your theory makes sense now, actually. It does. Because, you know, even we've all kind of gone through that to a much, much lesser extent when you're growing up and you're kind of teens and you're college age and you're trying to find yourself and you're trying to be a person that other people will like. And you kind of go through those phases. And I remember myself being like, oh, I can kind of be this cool guy. And then you're like, oh, hold on. No one really likes that guy. I'm not going to be that guy.
Yeah.
But in this movie, he's like, you know, he just jumps into it. He's like, yeah, I'm going to be this super snazzy, cool, in quotes, guy that actually is an asshole.
Exactly. I kind of wish he had killed the redhead with the chainsaw sooner. She was annoying. I was not a fan of her.
No, why?
I don't know. She was just awful. Was it Elizabeth? Is that her name?
I guess. There was no one in particular that I really wanted him to kill. I really didn't want him to kill his secretary, though. That was the one that I really, you know, was glad that he didn't kill.
Yeah.
Because I feel bad for her. And there's a funny, kind of dark humor, but slightly amusing scene where he's about to kill her, and then obviously when the phone goes, and it's his girlfriend, Evelyn, and he says to her, I think if you stay, you're going to get hurt. So she leaves, but you know, and she's actually like, you sure I should leave? And he's like, yeah, you should leave. But it's funny because, you know, he means I'm going to physically hurt you. Yeah. I've got this massive dart gun behind your head 30 seconds ago. She thinks he means I'm kind of still got feelings for my ex and it's going to be like emotionally painful for you. But he's like, no, I was literally 30 seconds away from you know, killing you.
So what do you make of him calling his lawyer and telling him all this stuff, and then his lawyer is just like, that was so funny. Do you think he
calls the lawyer,
or he didn't?
I explained this to myself just with the same theory that I had before, which is that the lawyer just didn't really care and you know, wasn't interested. He was wrapped up in himself or whatever. He's not interested in criminal law, right? There are these high-powered, you know, lawyers. He's a lawyer for all these Wall Street guys. So it's all money stuff. The last thing he expects is to have to deal with a mass murderer on his books, you know?
Yeah.
And he's just kind of like, this isn't funny. Don't talk to me about this again. Go away. Like, I'm not interested. But he also mentioned, he doesn't even know that he is Patrick Bateman. And he says, yeah, Bateman's a, you know, nerdy kind of spineless guy. He would never make this joke. And he thinks it's all a joke. And he tells him, he breaks down and kind of almost crying on the phone and tells him, like, I killed this guy, I killed this guy. This girl's body's dissolving somewhere. I ate their brains. I took sick videos of them and then made the next girl watch the last girl being killed. You know, all this stuff. And the lawyer just like, don't talk to me about this.
Yeah. It was so weird. And then why does he always tell people he has to go return tapes?
That's the best part of the whole movie because it's so ridiculous. You know, it's his get out of jail free card or it's his get out of any situation, you know, awkward situation. Oh no, I need to make an excuse. I've got to go return some videotapes. The first time I saw this movie, I think I used that phrase for about a year afterwards. Just fantastic. Like, hey, we've got to do this thing. I've got to go return some videotapes. But the best time is when the detective asks him, where were you on December 20th, months ago? And he's like, I don't know. I was probably returning videotapes.
Well, and now you can't even use that as an excuse.
No, we can't anymore because all we're doing is, you know, deleting something from our list on Netflix because we've already watched it.
Yeah. Cause
but I love it. I love that that's like, what were you doing on December 20th returning video? First of all, that takes 10 minutes. And secondly, like, how would you remember that you were doing that, you know?
Yeah.
But what are the videotapes? The only thing we see is that in his apartment, there's constantly either porn or, like, slasher films playing.
Which is... Like, working out and having porn going on just seems so weird.
Yeah, that's a weird thing to be exercising to, like, to porn or violence. You know, that's an unusual thing. And the guy is crazy, right? We've got the scene with the stray cat that we mentioned. We've got, obviously, the murders aside. His whole personality is erratic, you know. And he mentions, my bloodlust is spilling into... So I get the feeling that he's been doing this before, but it's been okay. Contained, and he says, now my mask is slipping and my nightly bloodlust is spilling into my day. So he's just losing his grip on the sanity that he was able to kind of keep things together before, you know, and it's just getting harder and harder to contain himself. I guess that's cool. But then there's the narcissist stuff where he's like, so I've just killed someone. Guess I better go get a manicure and a massage and, you know, have some girls kind of give me the full beauty treatment.
I gotta treat myself. Yeah. A little murder. A little murder and a little me time afterwards.
I also particularly love when the guy goes to touch his suit and he's like, oh, that's such a nice suit. What is it? And he's like, whatever the brand is, you know, it's Louis Vuitton or whatever. And he says, the compliment was sufficient and slaps his hand away. Like, don't touch the suit. You know, your verbal appreciation is all that's required here.
Yeah. Something like that kind of makes me feel like he doesn't own it. Like, everything in his life is a facade. And, you know, maybe he has these clothes or maybe they're just, you know, ones he acquired from somebody else's clothes. Like, maybe he just stole all of Allen's stuff, Paul Allen's stuff, you know?
Mm.
And so he gets mad that guy wants to touch it because he worked hard for that. Because I assume if you really like some, or if you spent your money on something and it's really important to you, but you're also like bragging that you have it, you're going to let the little peasants touch it because you want them to know how luxurious it is. And the fact that he gets like that and gets mad about it, it's like, it's weird.
That's an interesting theory. Yeah, there could be something in that because I don't know why else he doesn't let him touch it, to be honest. And the guy we're talking about is, of course, is it Carruthers or something? It's the guy. It's the same guy that has the glove scene in the toilet that fancies him. But even that guy who's depicted as not being like the others, he's still very self-obsessed because he sees Patrick Bateman with an overnight bag, dripping blood, carrying a corpse in it to put into the boot of his car. And he goes, Patrick, where did you get that bag? Like, no one really cares about the morality or what's happening. He sees the bag, but not the body in it, you know?
Yeah. I'm trying to think that.
So it's materialism. It's all about consumerism and capitalism and their obsession with it, I guess.
Like, that kind of reminds me of something else, and I don't know what movie it is. Where, like, people are just oblivious to someone's misdeeds, like, right in front of their face, and I can't think of what it is. Oh, well.
I don't know. I'll tell you what it reminds me of, because just a week or two ago, I read The Bonfire of the Vanities. I don't know if you know it, but it's a similar vibe. It's more of this yuppie Wall Street stuff. But that guy gets involved in an accidental criminal case because they hit someone with their car. He even works at the same company, Pierce & Pierce.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. But it's a similar vibe. So this is not a unique tale. I mean, slightly unique in the fact that I guess he's also a psychopath, but it's also a lot of that drawing on other Psycho movies. I mean, literally Psycho, right? That's the name of the character, you know, playing on that.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think, the only other thing that I think we need to mention that's super important is maybe, so he's in Paul Allen's apartment, and with the girl, it's a veritable horror house by the end. Like, one of the girls escapes, and she eventually dies, but she's opening the closet, and there's dead bodies hanging in it. In the bathroom, there's, like, blood writing on the wall, and, you know, it's all crazy. But then he goes back to clean up the apartment, and it's all clean and freshly painted, and there's a lady there doing a house viewing. And this is the least easily explained scene in the movie, I think.
Yeah, it's
because
very
it's not
weird.
Clear. Did he imagine some of the things then? Or the way I understand it is that she's also so self, I mean, not that she's self-obsessed, but she's renting the apartment is her job. So all she cares about is, you know, getting money, essentially. So she sees the apartment. She sees that murders have happened. Rather than going to the police, she's like, we got to hush this up or we'll never be able to rent this apartment out again. So we're just going to clean it up. We'll repaint it. We'll dispose of the bodies. And when he comes in, she basically says, did you see the ad in the Times? And he's like, yes. And then she knows that it's him because she says, well, there was no ad in the Times.
Yeah.
Please leave and don't come back. But it's a really confusing scene the first time you watch it. It's kind of like, what's going on? Why are they talking about an ad that doesn't exist? Why is the apartment clean? Did he imagine it all? You got to watch that one like a few times, and I'm still not 100% sure that my interpretation is even anywhere near correct, you know?
Yeah, it's very strange. And I'm like, what about the girl with the chainsaw at the bottom of the stairs? Like, did he clean that up? Like, did he just leave her?
You know? And some things don't make sense. And I watched this with a friend two nights ago, and they actually said to me, there's more plot holes than I had realized. Like, he's running through it would be very unrealistic for him to just run through the corridors of the apartment building naked, dripping blood with the chainsaw. Yeah. And as you say, he kills her at the bottom of the stairs. There's a corpse there. There's blood. How does no one see him, you know, cleaning it up? Yeah. And I mentioned before the overnight bag dripping blood. He walks past the security guard. No one notices the blood ever? Like, why does nothing ever get picked up on?
Yeah. And like, you know, maybe it's like the reverse of Sixth Sense. Like, nobody, well, I guess, no, the similar as Sixth Sense. Like, he's the only one that can see it. And nobody else can see the blood. Maybe washing his hands is like the mom in that Shakespeare play, right? Or is it the mom? The son.
Yes. It's Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, and Macbeth is washing the hands to get rid of the blood. Yeah.
Because he physically washes his gloves that were no need to wash.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it could be. Some of the things aren't easy to understand, and whether that's because it's badly made or just because you're not, you know, it's meant to be open to interpretation, I suppose, isn't for me to say, but I just thought, it's open to interpretation. Like, I don't know. It's difficult to explain that, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe it is that some of these things aren't really happening and he's imagining some aspects of it.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Maybe he didn't do all those murders. I don't know. Because, I mean, at one point he's killing cops in the street and everything. You'd think, like, you can't just go around and... He says he killed 40 people.
Yeah.
I think it's very difficult to just walk through New York, kill 40 people, and just get away with it.
Though I don't know if any city in the States that you could just do that. It probably New York would be the top one.
Okay, maybe.
You know, there's a lot of
funny that he gets away
things.
With it. And he, yeah, I suppose maybe it's possible, but he mentions, you know, at the end, this confession has meant nothing. You know, he confesses to his lawyer, he's confessing to us as well, and at the end, no one cares. And he just, yeah, this confession has meant nothing because no one's really that bothered by anything I've done.
Yeah.
So either he hasn't done it, or they're just all self-obsessed narcissists who don't give a damn.
Yeah. And then it just ends. And then you're just left wondering what the hell happened.
Yeah. It's a bit of a sudden ending in a way. Yeah. The first time I saw it, I was like, oh, I kind of... It's not one of those movies that ties everything up in a little ribbon at the end, you know? That's annoying.
I need ribbons. I need ties.
Yeah.
I need it. And I was left with balloons just everywhere, scattered all over the place.
Yep. What was your thought the moment it ended? Like, what did you think?
I go, it's over? Like, we don't have any resolution? Okay. And I stared at the screen. It was just like, okay.
Essentially, the plot is one sentence, right? He's a bad guy who kills people, but he gets away with it because no one cares somehow.
Yeah. I mean, there was a big drug problem in the 80s. Maybe they're just like, well, chalk it up to cocaine, I guess.
That even comes up in the movie when they're in that club and there's little cocaine booths to go to and they're shouting over the wall of the cubicle, like, keep it down, I'm trying to do drugs.
Yeah, that seemed like a really weird club for all those guys to be in.
Yeah, it's like a weird, kind of almost punky, gothy type place. Yeah. Like a cool... So why are these Wall Street guys there?
To me, it seemed like what gay bars are like now. Because we have one in Dallas that's like, it has... like drag queen shows in the front and then it's like a club in the back and you walk into the bathroom and there's guys, there's girls. It's just a mixture of people. And that's what kind of like the feel I got from this place. And I was like, they don't seem like they would have been in a place like that.
No, it's very uncharacteristic for them to be there. I don't know why they are, but they even have dinner with two strange, artsy, quirky, weirdo types, and it's like, why are they having dinner with these guys? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, we were like, are they a part of their dinner? Just we were questioning it as well.
Let me ask you, speaking of dinner, the first time, you've only seen this once, did you pick up on the fact that he's a cannibal?
Oh, no. Like, I know he talked about drinking their blood and stuff, but no, I didn't know that he was a cannibal.
So it's something that I didn't pick up on the first time either. And I mean, having seen it so many times, it was glaringly obvious to me this time. But, you know, it wasn't the first couple of times. And a lot of people don't seem to pick up on this. And I've had arguments with friends about this. They're like, there's no cannibalism in this movie. What are you talking about? So first of all, there's a scene where he's walking across the road and we see a woman and they stop at the road and he smiles and they walk on and that's all we see. About half an hour later, he opens the fridge and her head is in the fridge wrapped up. Not necessarily definitive evidence that he's eaten her, but he has put her in the fridge. That's the first clue. Then there's the bit where he's got the prostitute under the bed and, you know, he pulls out his toolkit of sharp implements. But he starts biting, and he comes up with blood all over his face because he's been chewing her, you know, leg or whatever under the bed. And then he mentions, actually, in his confession, it's kind of, he's mumbling and sobbing through it, so you don't necessarily pick up on it. He mentions that he tried to cook their brain.
Oh, I did not see that.
Yeah. And I think there's one more that I can't, off the top of my head, remember. There's three or four clues to the fact that he's actually... You know, he's not just, you know, having sex with these girls and killing them, he's also sometimes eating them.
Huh. Well, that's the best way to... I like my brains is to keep it fresh in the fridge. I mean.
Yeah. Yes. Also, one of my all-time favorite moments is when the girl's trying to escape and she hits him in the face. And he just screams, not the effing face, bitch!
I know, right?
Probably because he had some work done. You know?
Maybe. Yeah, it makes sense. I just love it. Because, like, all he cares about right now are his looks. Never mind the fact that he's, you know, about to kill people or whatever.
Yeah.
What's your take on the man prostitute, Christy? Because I feel so sorry for her. You know, the first time he brings her home, obviously it goes badly. Yeah, he pays her pretty well, from what we understand. But she ends up having to go to, like, the hospital. Mm-hmm. And she's thinking about suing him. So he gives her a check for a lot of money. And, you know, he tries to bring her home a second time. And she knows it's a bad idea. And she says, nope. And he says, like, the driver's here. You're safe. Get in the car. I'll cut you a check. Off we go. And she gets out and she's going to leave.
Yeah.
And he knows that she needs the money so badly and that she's so, you know, struggling so much, she's going to risk her life to go back with him. And he plays on that and he even whistles to her like a dog, like out the window of the car, whistles and shakes the money at her. And she gets back in the car and, you know, takes her life in her hands and goes home with him a second time.
Yep.
And I thought, for me, that's the saddest part of the movie. It's knowing someone's vulnerable and taking advantage of it and humiliating them, you know. I really don't like that part.
Well, that's what he does to the homeless man. I mean, he's like, hey man, you know, and talking to him, but then he's also like talking down to him. He's like, why are you homeless? Get a job. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's right. You're right, he does, yeah. He's like, I'm gonna help you. Actually, we got nothing in common. And then just stabs him. But yeah, he starts out by saying, you know, you should get a job. You know, why don't you have a job? And he says, why did you lose your previous job? Was it insider trading or were you drinking, you know?
Yeah, I like that those are the probably only two options. But, you know...
Yeah, but it's bad.
It seems weird to me that he would... If he is eating them, would you eat a homeless man? Or would you eat, like, the rich, like, fiancé? Like, why would you eat, you know?
Yeah, he leaves the homeless guy behind. I don't think he's eating everyone, but I think at least one or two he is, some of them, you know. I'm guessing the one that was his friend from college that he brings home, who laughs about the Whitney Houston album.
Yeah.
He seems to bite her under the bed, so I'm guessing she's one that he eventually eats. But, yeah, it's kind of unclear. It's something that just gets slipped in a few references, and people don't pick up on it, so... I'm guessing he's eaten one or two of them, but I don't think, you know, he said he's killed 40 people. I don't think he's eaten 40 people. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I think you start to, like, you can get sick from eating humans.
Yeah. And, you know, just a disclaimer to anyone listening, do not eat people.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
I'd hate to have to say that, but yeah, don't eat anybody.
Not even as a joke, you know?
So, what would you rate this movie then?
What are we rating out of? Stars?
So,
five?
It's a 1 out of 10, and then we rate it out of something from the movie. So, let's just say you were giving it 10 out of 10 Paul Allen's or Phil Collin music.
I think I have to give it. I want to give it like 11 out of 10 Phil Collins music. You know, for me, this is a perfect film.
Wow.
Okay, to stick to the rules of the scale, I'll go with 10.
You could do 11. We allow whatever you want to do. So 11 out of 10.
I'm gonna give it 11 out of 10, yeah.
Wow. That is not what I'm going to rate it. I mean, it did make me think. It did have some funny scenes in it. I would have to give it a 5 out of 10 hip to be squares.
Okay.
I do love Huey Lewis and the News. Fair. I've seen them in concert. They're fun.
Oh, wow. That's, I would like to see them. That's cool.
Yeah. They were coming to town. It was them in Chicago. And
nice.
My dad loves Chicago and my mom loves Huey Lewis in the News. And I was like, hey, I want to take dad to this concert. My mom's like, well, I want to go. So we all three went, and Huey Lewis was amazing. Chicago was,
you know,
kind of sad, though.
I once interviewed the original drummer from Chicago, Danny Seraphine, when he released a solo album on an old podcast many years ago.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I liked Chicago.
It's funny. He was the drummer, but then Chicago's biggest song is If You Leave Me Now, and the drums really don't do much in that song. So I was like, oh, okay.
That's so sad. Yeah, when Chicago was playing, like, the band was amazing, but we couldn't hear the singer. And so, you know, half the part of the song is, you know, the singing. And so that was kind of lackluster. But Huey Lewis came out and performed with them. And when he did, it was great.
Nice.
So highly recommend Huey Lewis if you can go see him somewhere.
I've seen so many gigs this year, but I won't mention most of them because they're mostly Spanish artists. But I did see Aqua do Barbie Girl, and that was cool.
Have you seen the movie?
I haven't yet. I don't know if I... So everyone's talking about, like, Barbie versus Oppenheimer, and when I hear everyone talk about it, that makes me not want to see either of them. You know, it makes me be like, no, I'm not going to be part of this cultural movement.
That's how I was with Frozen. I didn't see that for years. It took until being stuck at home with COVID, you know, restrictions, that before I saw it.
I've still not seen Frozen, but I take your point, because that's how I was with Harry Potter. I'd seen the first two when I was a kid, and until COVID, I'd not seen the rest. And then I watched them all in a week. I just did them like one night after the other. But I had put it off for many years because I was like, everyone likes it. That makes me hate it.
Uh-huh. Samesies. I didn't watch it until we watched it for the podcast. And now my co-host is obsessed.
And yeah, they're good movies, you know. But.
Yeah, she's like,
I'm sad that we got a 5 from you, but my 11 brings it up a little bit. So we still got 16 out of 20 between us, right?
I mean, a part of me wanted to give it like a 2. So a 5 is pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you really didn't like it.
I really didn't like it. I don't know why. We kept stopping it, and then I was like, oh, I guess we have to start it again. Like, keep going.
Wow. And the thing is, it's not the murder content, because we did Psycho before, and you liked that.
Yeah, so. I liked that movie. Yeah, no, it's not the murder. I don't know what it was. I think it's not understanding what was going on, and just kind of being overall confused. And a lot of times when he was talking, I didn't hear any of it. Like, I don't know if there's something wrong with our TV, but whenever music is playing, we cannot hear anybody talking at all.
Oh, okay.
And so it makes it really hard. And I think, like, shows nowadays are just putting the music up just a little too loud. And it's really hard to hear people talk. And so we're just sitting there. We're like so confused.
That's a shame, but
I know
the music's important in this one.
I really like to like movies, and hey, but a 5 out of 10 is pretty good, because I didn't think I didn't like it.
Well, I mean, the short answer of why I like it is because, despite its dark content, it's a fun movie. You know, it's brightly lit. There's no dark, spooky, you know, nonsense. It's fun. He's got cool music like Hip to Be Square and Sisudo, the Phil Collins one. He's kind of dancing around. He makes it fun. You know, it's not scary. It's not unsettling in a dark kind of way. But that makes it more unsettling, because it's like, oh, you're happy to be, like, killing these people. And that's very creepy. But it's also, it's got this fun kind of 80s vibe to it. And I think this is fantastic. Then you add in the fact that he is obviously he's a psychopath, but he's also a sociopath, right? He's also just obsessed with his image and all that kind of stuff. I find that to be like a very enjoyable kind of character.
Yeah.
So I love it.
Well, it's kind of like the Joker from Batman. Like,
Yeah.
He smiles while he's killing people, you know? Just, it's very unsettling. But I wasn't unsettled by it. Like, that didn't bother me. I think the inconsistencies, the plot holes, were just too much for me to get over, I guess.
I think that's fair. And in all honesty, the book probably fills some of those in, but...
Yeah, probably.
The book is kind of boring, as I say. Bits of it read like a Wikipedia. And even, it just doesn't show things as well. So, like, that famous business card scene is kind of irrelevant in the book. You just skip through it, yeah. You know? Or that famous scene where he goes through all of his, you know, skincare routine. That actually happens quite late in the book, not at the beginning. So it loses its kind of, one of the iconic scenes in the movie as well. So I think the movie is well made for me. But I guess I can see why you don't like it as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so sorry to hate on your favorite movie.
It's okay. You've only broken my heart. That's all, you know.
Oh. Don't go breaking my heart.
I couldn't if I tried. So we're confirming that Psycho is better than American Psycho.
Yes. Yes. Which is funny because he's not American. Just.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. So, and isn't there there's another one, right?
Yeah, you know, there is a sequel, actually. I suppose that's something we should mention quickly. I didn't watch it. I think I watched 10 minutes, 15 minutes of it or something. It was terrible. It's got terrible reviews. It's really got no connection. I think it was a cash grab, basically.
Yeah.
And... supposedly, you know, the murderer and it's related to him or something like that. That's the connection.
An American Psycho in Paris? Is that what it is?
I don't know. There is an American Psycho 2.
Oh.
So if there's an American Psycho in Paris, that might be a third movie, maybe? I'm not sure. I watched 10 minutes of the sequel and I just like, nah, this is not a good film. It was like a college party or something, if I remember. Okay. It didn't have the same setting, the Wall Street stuff. And I... You know, it had terrible reviews, and I just thought, I'm gonna watch this.
That sucks. Well,
that's it. I think I have nothing else to say.
Yeah, me neither. Well, how about you let the listeners know where they can find you if they want to listen to your podcast?
Of course. You can go to booksboys.com. That's the website. Click on some buttons. Click on some links. Be my friend. But also, yeah, just, you know, download the app. You can actually stream it on the website, but of course, they're in Spotify and, you know, iTunes, what's it called? Apple Podcasts and Amazon, what is it? Podcatcher, Google Podcast, well, all the usual podcasts.
All the platforms.
Everyone's got Spotify, so just go there.
Yes. And if you want to be engaged with any of our content, you can find us at Two Chicks Talk Flicks on all platforms. And, well, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for having me. It was a long time in the making, doing our second one. I'm very pleased to finally do it.
Yes, I'm excited. I was excited to do it. I wish I was more excited about the movie. Well, all right, guys. Until next time, toodles.
Bye-bye.
This episode was produced by Two Chicks Talking Flicks. Music was produced by Michael Giovanni. If you like this episode, please like and subscribe. If you'd like to be a part of the show, have a movie suggestion, or just want to give us some love, you can email us at twochickstalkingflicks@gmail.com. Thanks, guys. Toodles.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.